Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Thumbnail faces.
Thumbnail faces! All right, I've got an empty can of Dr. Pepper here. What a thumb like.
Let me just make sure my microphone's recording all good. Test, you can hear me all right, eh?
Yeah.
So.
You tell me when you've got the thumbnail.
Yeah, I've done it.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to a new episode of Meeting of the Elders
a
on
brand
the Cop Popture
new,
podcast.
Never
a
before
brand,
heard.
You've never heard it.
I've never heard it.
This is a special show we do once a month here on the Cold Popture podcast, where if you are on our Cult Elders tier over at patreon.com/coldpopture, you can join up and tell us your thoughts on the previous three episodes of the podcast. You can either do it in written form or send in some voice messages, and we have got both to get through today, Richard, as we reflect on what our community thinks of the Barbershop franchise, the Superhero Fatigue Quiz, and the Addams Family franchise. Those are the subjects of today's reflective discussion.
These I'm are excited. The board on which we put our playing characters, and then these little pawns move around the board.
This is the canvas
with which
we Jackson Pollock.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
AJ.
Yeah,
how's your week been? You know, let's have a little bit of preamble before we get to the topics.
I got drunk last night for the first time in probably a year.
Wow, how was that?
Horrible. I remembered why I don't drink anymore.
Nice.
I was at my friend's house and I'd had quite a few drinks, and then I just very politely said to them, "Hey, I think I need to throw up." And I very politely excused myself, went to the bathroom where no one was there, but still very politely, I made myself throw up into the toilet.
What were you drinking?
I drank 3 rum and cokes. Then I had this crazy cocktail from this new bar in Christchurch. Then I had 2, like, those cans of, like, gin and cranberry or something like
right.
that. And between you, me, and the community, I smoked a little bit of marijuana as well.
But that's not legal in New Zealand. How could you have
done
that?
I was just kidding.
Okay, right.
But the concoction made me feel mighty bad, and I was not there for it, as the kids on TikTok say.
Well, I thought this could be a fun place to tell a story that I've been holding on to for the week. I remember earlier in the year or sometime last year, I came to the podcast a bunch of times with updates on mine and Craig's adventures at Pub Quiz and all the weird rules that this place that we used to frequent had, and made it just a unpleasant night, but we kept on winning or coming second, which meant that we then had a voucher we had to spend at the same place, so we kept going back. Eventually we came third and we were broken free from the curse, but I now have another regular pub quiz that I do, and this one is like a Tuesday night. Used to do it regularly after work, and now it's the only time that I see these people because I don't work with them anymore, but we've kept it up as this regular thing on Tuesday nights. The quiz that we do, the weird thing at this quiz, though, is they only give a prize for first prize. They're like first place is the only thing that gets a prize. And it's $100 bar tab though, so it's like a pretty good deal. And every now and then they do like series of, so the highest score over like 5 or 8 weeks when all tallied together wins $500. And as well as the, you know, if you win each individual week, you get blah, blah, blah. So my team goes by the name Pub Jizz because, you know, how everyone's always like, quiz on my face, quiz in my pants. Yeah. And they replace the word jizz with quiz. When we first went, I was like, well, it'd be funny if we did the other way around. And we were like, what's an expression that uses the word quiz? Pub quiz was the first one I could think of. And so we go by Pub Jizz. And we do, we generally do pretty well. And it's this funny thing where it's like, I know everyone at that bar hates us because we have the stupidest names. Yeah. And then we call Pub Jizz. And then we also win with, like, you know, there's like 3 or 4 teams that winning is shared around, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And we're one of them. And so just this week, they finished up an 8-week series. And we came second on the first week. This was 2 months ago. Came second on the first week. And then we won the next 3. And after we won like 2 of those, we were like, fuck, we have to come all 8 weeks now. And I'm the only constant throughout every single one of these 8 weeks because they decided long ago that if I wasn't available, they just wouldn't do it because they rely on me for like the movie rounds and things like that. And so we were doing very well. We were at the top of the leaderboard for a long time. And then just like 2 or 3 weeks ago, one team just randomly beat us by like 15 points somehow. Like, we came second, and then they just got, like, so far ahead. So then it became, like, between us two for the top. And this team that came up from behind, I think you used to only have, like, a few people in them, but now has, like, 20 people on the team. And our team averages between, like, minimum 4, maximum 6 or 7, just depending on who's available.
Surely you can't have a 20-person team.
But so they have, like, half the bar on this team. And so last week, which is the second to last week, the guy who runs the pub quiz has been asked now by like the people that organize the quiz to run it off this app. And so he like has to enter all the scores into the app and everything. And then at like 9 o'clock on a Tuesday night, the app went down for the whole country. So he couldn't give out the scores of who won. But it was clearly like going to be between us and this team of like 20 people. And one of them came up to me, and I had in front of me the tallied scores, and by my calculations, we got 100 points. And then he was like, he came over and he's like, were you guys counting your score? And I was like, yeah, as I grabbed the piece of paper off the table, he's like, what'd you guys get? He's like, we reckon we got 106. And I was like, 107. And he was like, no, seriously. And I was like, 100,000. And he was like, I don't think you know how the quiz works. And I said, I guess we'll find out next week, won't we? And then it's funny because I was like, fuck, these guys must hate me. But then we actually beat them. Like, we got 100, and they got 100, and we got like 103.
Right.
So now there was like 1 point in it going into the last round. Over the whole series, it was only 1 point difference. So it all came down to the one this week. And for those that don't know how these quizzes work, or like might be different in other places, you have like 8 rounds, and then the middle of that is what they call the list, which is where you get a question that has maybe 15, 20 correct, possible correct answers, and you have to write as many correct ones as you can without writing an incorrect one. So if you write 3 correct ones, like 9 correct ones, but your third one is wrong, you only get 2 points. And this week, actually, it was any actor to have played Batman or Superman in an official production. And so it was like literally just as quickly as I could write, we got 10 out of 10 very easily.
As quickly as you could write very obvious answers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a pub quiz I was frequenting, and I skipped the week that the list was Jim Carrey roles. And and my team were like, we didn't do very well. And I was like, Jesus Christ, you couldn't ask me an easier question. Like, not even just Jim Carrey, just any like, you know,
any roles, just film roles.
Yeah.
The list is just film characters.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, oh, Peter Griffin. It's like, he's actually from TV, AJ. But there's a running joke in my team that, like, I'm so ready for it to be American Idol winners because I know the first 10 in order and no more than that. But anyway, so gets down to it. we do pretty well, but this team that's like double or triple our size at least beats us. And they came over at the end, like, oh, so they did the like stand up and like thank the class, like thank the teacher thing, be like, oh, hey, thank you so much for like running the quiz. And it's like, they're just these like, I don't like this team as people, even though they're like, and they're beating us, but they, there's also, in addition to the list, there's this thing called the Ponderous Puzzle, which is like, the answer will be like the radio. And so at the end of the first round, you get a question that's like, oh, you know, I was invented a long time ago, and you get like very broad question, like clues to it, and then each round you get easier ones. And so this one last week, the answer was Wuthering Heights, and part of it in the first round was like, oh, it's the name of a Danish-Swedish metal band. And someone from this team, in the middle of coming up with the pond, like at the end of the first round, went to the toilet, and I passed him in the toilet, and I was like joking, because he came up to me before the quiz. I was like, oh, may the best man win and all this shit. And I was, as he was walking into the stall, I was jokingly going to say, don't look up the answer while you're in there. But then I was like, ah, oh, no, I don't want to have an interaction with someone in the bathroom. And then he came out of the bathroom as his team member was like walking the answer up, and he pulled him aside and was like, no, it's definitely Wuthering Heights, I know, like. And then, and the guy was like, are you sure? And he was like, yeah, I'm sure. And so they walked back to the table, changed the answer to Wuthering Heights, and handed it back in. And two people got it right on the first round, and when they announced, oh, this team got it, and one of the teams are like, well, how did another team get it? And it's like, well, maybe they cheated as well. And then at the end of it, we came second, we got a $300 voucher. And the guys from the team came up to us and were like, oh, you know, like, good job, guys. Like, it's been a while since we've had to fight that hard for the win and all this stuff. And I was like, and I shook their hand, and I said, you know, it's fine. I'm happy with the moral victory, because, and they sort of like laughed, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, because we didn't have to cheat and look up the answers. And he was like, no, I know the Wuthering Heights. Like, no, I know the band. I didn't even say what part I was accusing him of cheating on. And then I was like, well, no, look, I saw what I saw. You went to the toilet, didn't know. You came back very sure of the answer. And they were just like, okay, dude, believe whatever you want to believe, and like stormed off. And it's like, I've made an enemy. Like, these people,
this is what I was gonna say, man. I don't interact with anyone in my life the way you're interacting with this.
So this is the thing, because when it was happening, I was thinking, I need to tell AJ about this, because, like, you would hate to be with me while this was happening.
Yeah.
And I know as well that it's like, I mean, I'm in the right. Like, to me, I'm the underdog. But to them, God, I must be, like, the biggest fuckwit they've ever met. Mm-hmm. But also, like, they were cheating, and, you know, they got called out.
Maybe he just had a poop epiphany. We don't know.
Yeah, but the fact that as soon as I brought up cheating, they were like, no, we knew the answer to that question. It's like, I knew you. You're cheating.
I think that the whole fairness of it stopped when they became a 20-person team. You've been talking for 15 minutes nearly, and this whole time I have been listening, but predominantly I've been thinking to myself, 20 people, and no one's flagging this. No one's going, this isn't exactly fair, even though it's like, in every way you could count it, it gives that team incredible advantage.
I will say, I'm probably exaggerating, but I'm exaggerating like, it's at least 12, I would say, which is still insane for a pub quiz team.
Wow. Well, thank you for telling us another adventure of how Richard was morally right, but still kind of a dick about something.
I hope that people enjoyed that story. As I got halfway through telling it, and I was like, this is boring.
That's not boring.
I was boring myself.
It was very long when off pod we opened with, all right, let's make sure this is under an hour.
Well, yeah, I didn't want to make it too far under an hour.
Right, nice. Well, let's see
how
we go.
I'll just cut out that story in the edit.
No, it's good. It's good stuff, I promise. No, I was enthralled. I just was also aware that we've got a bunch of correspondence to get through.
Mm. Should we get on with it?
Alrighty. So, our first message is about Barbershop, and this comes from Cheese on the Discord, who says, Barbershop, great ep, looking forward for when you get to the Friday franchise. The Friday trilogy, Friday next Friday, Friday after next, yeah. I think.
Great titles.
Is currently in contention for our Christmas film franchise fortnight's next fortnight. I don't think it's winning, but if you guys are patrons and you want to control what we watch, the poll is currently live for our next franchise after Ted. And could that be Friday with your help? Could that be Friday? Cheese goes on to Adam's Family and says, I saw these two movies probably when they came out as a kid and loved them. You two articulated why I was always confused about the first one's Festa plot and never made any sense to me. But the characters are always so funny and enjoyable. Every scene makes me laugh. The play where the kids spurt blood all over the audience is fantastic. The big song and dance with Festa and Gomez at the party is great. I totally forgot to talk about that on the episode. I love seeing Gomez losing his mind in the hotel and Morticia talking to the unemployment person. Yeah, this is all great fodder that I'm surprised most of the movie wasn't like exploiting, you know? When Gomez calls into the TV show, it's so funny. Yeah, because he calls into like a daytime talk show and he like calls the guy by his first name, and the guy on the TV is like, Gomez, you can't keep calling him. Also, did you notice the little blonde girl at the lemonade stand is the same actor and maybe character as the popular one at the camp in Family Values? I like the plot of Family Values, but some of the jokes in the first one are the best.
I didn't pick up on that.
I wonder if that's intended or intentional in any way to be the
or
same
or if it's
character,
just like the set designer's daughter or something like that.
Yeah, but it's a big expansion of role, and it's not it's not a character that couldn't be both of those characters as well. You know, finally, Cheese says on superhero fatigue, definitely feeling it along with Star Wars fatigue. Didn't see Quantumania, Secret Invasion, Boba Fett, Ahsoka, the Marvels, etc. I'll tune into the interesting ones, Loki, Andor, but I don't feel the need to try keep up, and it just feels so samey and fan servicey.
Yeah,
I agree.
Star Wars fatigue we didn't really touch on so much, but I mean, yeah, Star Wars has been an interesting franchise to watch because it was this once in a decade event, you know, that was like the most important thing to hit movie screens. And now it's like, oh, did you see the Obi-Wan, Ewan McGregor returning as Obi-Wan series that people clamored for 20 years? Oh yeah, I caught some of it. What didn't seem very interesting.
I watched it. It sucked. It was so bad. It was so bad. And it did that thing, which I think needs to be given a name. It needs to be made a piece of terminology, which is when a movie or show references like a meme from the fan base in the canon. Because at the end of the Obi-Wan show, he walks up to an 8-year-old Luke Skywalker, which also... Guys, why the fuck are these characters meeting in the interim between, you know? Like, anyway, I'll get to that in a second. And he goes, hello there. And it's like, oh yeah, because 21-year-olds think Obi-Wan saying hello there is funny. And it's not even supposed to be funny in the show. It's supposed to be like a sincere moment.
But like, in defense of that, I get that hello there is like the meme. But it's not like a thing he says once and everyone's like, it's like actually kind of his catchphrase. Like, he says it in A New Hope.
I was so disappointed with that show, and I think I'm so... I'm the David against the 20-person quiz Goliath, in that I think I'm so clearly in the right for thinking it's a bad idea to have Obi-Wan and Darth Vader interact between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope. That, to me, is crystal clear. That when they see each other in A New Hope, that is the first time they've seen each other since the Battle of Mustafar, right? And now it is not. Now it is not the first time they've seen each other, because they saw each other randomly, like... 20 year or how it will be 8 years after Revenge of the Sith, I guess. And like, it's and they have a have you seen you so you've seen bits of it. They have
I was playing a character. I haven't seen it yet.
Right. They have another battle at the end in the like the last episode, and there's a bit that everyone thought was really cool where Darth Vader's helmet gets busted and you can see like Hayden Christensen's eye peeking out, which I thought was kind of cool, and then found out this has apparently happened in the animated shows like dozens of times. and they fight again and whatever. But it's like, there's two things about this that pissed me off, right? Have I been able to talk about this on any platform yet? Because this feels weird that I'm going on this tirade for the first time on pod. Maybe it's not. But it's a problem for two reasons. One, is this better than the Battle of Mustafar at the end of Revenge of the Sith? A movie I don't like. And no, it is not better than that. That one, it just has obviously a lot more gravitas, a lot more work put into
You're
it.
You're my brother, Anakin.
Yeah, beautiful stuff. You. Beautiful stuff. But also, it puts this weird moral conundrum in the middle of Star Wars where Obi-Wan essentially defeats Darth Vader but then chooses not to kill him. And it's like, okay, well, you've just doomed... You've enabled genocide then, Obi-Wan Kenobi, by not killing Darth Vader when you had the chance. Anyway, that's my Star Wars fatigue. That was where I was like, all right, this is starting to... I really wanted this, and now I don't want it.
Yeah, I mean, Star Wars fatigue is, like,
exhausting.
I can't even imagine, like, I don't think there's a Star Wars project that could legitimately make me, like, excited. The closest, I guess, would be, like, the Aardman episode of The Visions, which I watched and was fine. It's cute seeing Aardman animation and the little robot from... A Grand Day Out is in the background of a shot, but it's like, it would have to be based on the creative.
You're not watching that for Star Wars, you're watching that for art.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, if there was a creative team allowed to play in the sandbox, but then even then, it's like, same with Marvel, that it's like they don't get to actually have. And also, like, the other thing with Star Wars is it's like you can announce whoever being a part of it, and it's like, well, probably won't come out.
The bedrock is burnt, I think. Like the soil is what's it called? Like the soil is corrupt in Star Wars now.
Yeah.
You
know?
You can't grow anything on that land.
Barren.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think it doesn't matter. I guess I'll watch Andor season 2, but Andor season 1 is like so stupidly good that I kind of, part of me wishes it didn't exist so that I could have this neat little narrative.
So that you could be like, everything is bad, yeah.
Yeah, but Andor is like probably the best show I've watched this year.
Yeah.
Like, it was so good.
I watched a few episodes.
I want to be free of it. I want to be free of Andor.
went on to... That's someone's name. Went on to continue about the superhero fatigue thing, saying, I believe AJ touched on this same point, but it's a shame that the poor quality and oversaturation is occurring at the same time as these properties have trended towards being more diverse in race/background/gender/orientation, etc. Plenty of people will wrongly point to the wokeness being the reason they've gone downhill. I hope the studio heads who often take the wrong message from what's successful or fails don't take the wrong message here and cut back on the diversity in the characters' stories told, and creatives involved in the entire process. Interesting timing with this, because Bob Iger, just in the last couple of days, made a few comments, but one talking about how Disney has been focusing on the wrong things, and going forward will focus on making entertaining stories first and not pushing an agenda, essentially. Not having messages, is what he said.
Yes,
but then
that's
also,
right.
I was reading an article
is such an ominous side of things to come.
But it's also like Disney's been very like, I would argue they've been like too apolitical recently.
Yeah.
But the thing is that, I was also reading an article about how Disney and Marvel has weirdly like thrown Nia DaCosta under the bus for the underperforming of the Marvels. And yeah, like there was things like Bob Iger has said there weren't enough cooks in the kitchen, essentially, and that they needed more oversight on set, which is like pretty much explicitly saying, like, I think this is her fault and we could have fixed it. There was like all these leaks coming out about like, oh, she was doing post-production remotely because she went off. She's like, oh, I just think it's pretty weird. She went off to do another film, but it's like, that's pretty standard. Steven Spielberg made the entirety of the post during the post-production of Ready Player One. And
that's why it's called The Post.
Yeah, exactly. And
We're in post-production, so I'm about to go into the post-production.
Pre-post-production. But
yeah,
the
now we've filmed it, so now we're in the post-post-production.
But the and the other thing was as well that it's like, oh, she wasn't even at the cast and crew screening because she's like abandoned the film. And then she was like, I wasn't invited. And they had the screening on my birthday. And I was celebrating my birthday
what
at the time.
Fuck? And that's so weird.
But it's interesting because it's like if the Marvels had opened really strong and then fallen off, that's one thing. You can be like, well, obviously the film wasn't good then. Like that's more of a mark of the film's quality. But it opened so low that it's like, well, that is a branding issue. That is a marketing issue, which falls under your oeuvre, Bob Iger and Marvel, that it's like, yeah, a film having a bad opening is not the fault of the director. And also, like, because the strike lifted like as the film came out, so I was like, Nia DaCosta was doing all she could. Like, she did the entirety of the press for the movie, and yeah, it's just a very strange thing. I don't think we'll see her returning anytime soon.
I would also say as well, like, yeah, I'm very concerned with these Bob Iger comments because for a long time it felt like the left or the progressive way of thinking in the world, we had this little victory that like even mainstream blockbusters kind of got what is okay to say. You know, like they weren't doing a very good job, but they were on our team, I guess, is basically what it felt like. But with comments like this, it makes me think like, the last, let's say, 7 years have felt like there was a shift toward like progressive thinking being the dominant and acceptable way of speaking and thinking and especially treating movies and art. And even then it wasn't good enough, you know? Even in the last 7 years, we've had some abysmal things happen in the face of progressiveness. But it's still been like general public opinion has recognized what's good and what's bad. But I don't know, man. I feel like, yeah, with the governments across the world, New Zealand's one specifically, but I don't know if the other countries are doing much better either. Like, was this the left's time in the sun? Was post Me Too?
Are we going to look back in 20 to 30 years and think that this was, you know,
2017 to 2024 was the year, the closest we got to a progressive society, or, and then we regressed again?
Or is it that, you know, this was just the beginning of the woke agenda? Continue that thought, saying there's also a separate discussion to be had on poorly implemented diversity pandering versus actual diversity in the creative process and storytelling, but I'm not the one with the experience or insight to meaningfully contribute to it. My only point on it would be that the former, while pretty bad, could potentially lead to more of the latter down the line.
Well, that's what I've always said. Like, I, at least in the beginning, I was willing to forgive what the edgelords would call virtue signaling, because it's like oh yeah, this model in this deodorant commercial has armpit hair and they make a point of it, yeah, maybe that is virtue signaling, but that is also affecting a beauty standard, and I would like it if the beauty standard in the future was that, in this case, women weren't obligated to shave their armpits to look beautiful, you know,
because AJ likes them hairy.
Love him, Harry, mate. Yeah! No, so...
It's still, like, for you.
I was thinking that as I said it. Well, you said it. You stitched me up there. So I was of this camp where it was like, stop complaining about virtue signaling because it's going to lead to it not being virtue signaling, right? But then you have examples of like the lesbian kiss in Rise of Skywalker appears on screen for half a second, or even slightly more generous stuff like the, you know, one of the
Jungle
Russo
Cruise.
Brothers being gay in Endgame, you know, and it's these things that are like, well, now you're pandering, and that's maybe a bit different to virtue signaling. Now it's like,
yeah, it's because I think the reason it's considered worse is because the studio is coming out and being like, Yeah, don't worry, Gaze. We put something in there for you. And it's when that's a background, out of focus kiss that's like, come on. I think, you know, the Russos came out and were like, yeah, it felt important for us to play this character. But it's like, yeah, I mean, that was a nice little scene of someone talking about dealing with something and the character happened to be gay. And it's like, yeah, that's fine. And, but it's, yeah, it's when you get stuff like Jack Whitehall and Jungle Cruise that it's like, yeah, that character can be gay, but the way they like dance around it and all the stuff.
They don't say the word.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I also think, like, so I'm currently in the post-production of one of my short films. And the film, I'm maybe going to give a little too much away, so skip if you don't want to spoil my own short film for you. But, like, the film is about, like, an actress auditioning for, like, a strong female lead, right? And the approach to writing these fictional scripts was not, let's write a character that is like this sexist character that actresses always find themselves auditioning for. Let's instead be like, this is by male writers who think they're feminists trying to write that, but they are still falling into the same problems. And we had these two American guys on set the other day who are playing these boardroom execs that comment on the audition at the end of the film. And their line, they have like two lines each, nothing. Yeah, but they were, while we were setting up, they did what I told them was the most boring improv I've ever heard, where they sort of just workshopped each other's characters by having like rich business exec conversations. And it was so funny because it was just like, yeah, I knew a guy who got a Ferrari, got his and hers Ferraris for him and his wife. No, no kidding. Month later, dropped dead. You know, like, it's just these, like, boring-ass conversations. And I told one of them, like, you guys think you're feminists, but you're not. And that's the joke, right? Mm. It's not that you're sexist in the old way. You're sexist in the new way, right? Yeah. And one of the things that they said that really stuck with me, and I was like, damn, these guys really get the character, is one of them was like, oh, but we're feminists, you know? We want this. This is just them bantering. And then the other one goes, yeah, well, there's money in it. And I was like, holy shit, that's the whole thesis of the film. Yeah. That's the whole thesis of this conversation, is that there is money in being progressive.
Yeah.
You know? But there's also risk in it in turning off non-progressive folks, so you've got to do it in this way that strikes a middle ground, and that middle ground pisses off both sides.
Mm.
You know? Because you're doing it for money and not for genuine good reasons.
So. Is there an example you can think of recently where it's like, I don't know how to word, but it's like where it is clearly like a monetary. So like talking about from a Disney or a Marvel or a Star Wars, that kind of thing that has actually been well implemented.
I think you look at the fucking animated areas of Disney there, that I'm fine with a lot of that feminism because it's like, first of all, it's aimed, like, a big part of their demographic is, like, young girls. But something like Moana or Frozen, I think, have positive feminist messages in them.
Yeah. There was also the Muppet Babies episode where Gonzo came out as non-binary.
Yeah. And, like, that's Gonzo's non-binary, like, identity kind of existed before the term non-binary, so I think it was like making ends meet, basically. I don't know too much about it, but I think there are plenty of examples of people doing it right, and as I say, even examples within Disney and other conglomerates, which I don't really have an issue with. But yeah
I used to think the ends meet was like meat, and it was like sort of like the offcuts of meat.
The offcuts.
And it's like, we're earning enough to make ends meet. And it's like the bare minimum to feed your family.
Yeah. Uncle Blister says to us, thought questions. One, there's been Clerks and Barbershop. What other, this is what this not often thought about job is like, the movie, would you like to see examined? Alternatively, what other films that are like this would you suggest? 40-Year-Old Virgin comes to mind, as does Office Space, but not so much as an examination of culture surrounding them. Buddy, you watch any romantic comedy from the, like, 2000s to whenever they stopped making romantic comedies, everyone in those movies has like the most interesting job you've never heard of.
Writing, you know, greeting cards.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Writing greeting cards. What is he in 51st Dates? He's like a... He works at an aquarium or a zoo, or like he's a zookeeper.
Yeah,
like
the zookeeper with
we bought a zoo.
yeah, Madagascar. Lots of to answer your question, there's a lot of a lot of zoo movies for you. Yeah. Now it's something you see a lot more in TV, I guess, but they probably don't go as like specific. But you know, like things like Parks and Rec and The Office, like you know, literally the term workplace comedy applies to it, but. Yeah, what other jobs would you like to see? Podcasting? I mean, I guess we've got Alex Inc.
I do not want to see that represented on film. It's nowhere near interesting enough to
watch. Dad, your podcasts and you guys are special.
Yeah, it's so good. Yeah. I always thought there needs to be a TV show about Let's Players, like professional Let's Players.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and how a YouTube channel would be run. I'm surprised that hasn't been made yet, especially since, like, YouTuber is now, like, a job that kids want, just, like, firemen or whatever, you know?
Yeah, that's, like, I hate when people, I can't remember if I've spoken about this on the podcast before, but, like, when people are like,
oh, have aspirations.
We live in a dystopia. Did you know that, like, kids want to be YouTubers now? And it's, like, that is slightly less insane than wanting to be an actor or a rock star when we were kids, you know, like, it's more achievable technically, like, but it's not a sign of it being a dystopia. It's like, kids have always wanted easy jobs that get them fame and lots of money. Mm. There's just a new one.
Yeah. Yeah. Angle Blister goes on, what gimmick do you think Hollywood will attach onto now that superhero movies might start fading out? Honestly, we talked about this. Honestly, it could be auteur film again. Like, of all the people waiting to have the day in the sun, like, no one's really complaining about, like, the auteur film at the moment. Like, everyone's pretty happy with it. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a resurgence in thoughtful and crafted independent projects. Yeah, because it's like the polar opposite of superhero movies.
Yeah, which can be blockbusters, you know, like
Oppenheimer
and Barbie. Although, like, more cynically, it's been a year of a few good or like well-received video game adaptations.
But has the curse been broken, Richard? Has the video game movie curse been broken?
Whether or not the like critical curse has been broken, they're certainly making bank. Money.
I do, yeah. In terms of critical response, I do wonder, like, 10 years ago, I was saying, like, oh, once they figure it out, that's going to be the next big thing. But now I'm like, oh, they've taken a while to figure this out.
But it's like, because we've seen, like, a kids' animated movie that is one of the highest grossing films of the year in Super Mario Bros. And, you know, that was a real, like, fans love it, critics hate it kind of thing. And then you have Five Nights at Freddy's, which is like a look how rabid, like, you know, tapping into this like rabid fan base and like people saying, oh, there actually is this like really passionate fan base. And if we just make a movie that honors that, we can make a lot of money. But then also the third one, it wasn't a movie, but The Last of Us is that like you actually can take stories told for consoles or for like, you know, for games and make them into high art. So it's like we kind of have seen three really important different adaptations that Hollywood can go, wow, I mean, like if we just fucking tap into these stories, we've been tapping into comic books for so long, we can do whatever we want.
But the thing with The Last of Us as well is like that is Like, the future of video game adaptations is television then, right?
Mm. And just long form, yeah.
Yeah, and you can be, you know, you can be like, oh, The Last of Us finally is the best video game adaptation ever. And it's like, right, well, this wording has changed from best video game movie to best video game adaptation. Mm. And I've got, you know, if every video game gets made into a good TV show now, that's fine, whatever. But I am saying, like, the movie is still needed to be cracked, I think. The because people, and it's, if the conversation is, well, AJ, what would you rather watch, a Last of Us TV show or a Last of Us movie?
Yeah,
totally the TV show. Totally the TV show. Obviously, I'm wanting that. But what I'm saying is, like, if the question is, how do you adapt a video game to a movie? I would argue that still hasn't been worked out. Even if we have a billion good TV show adaptations.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't watched FNAF, but...
it's apparently terrible.
It's not what the fans say, mate.
I heard every fan I know has been like, wow, this sucked.
Well, they obviously weren't fans then, so they didn't like it. Yeah, I think as well that... What video games would you like to see adapted?
I don't care enough about video games to have an answer to that question. I shouldn't say I don't care, but I don't play enough to probably have an answer to that question. I reckon you could make a decent Half-Life movie. I think you could probably make a decent Portal movie, like that area of the video game sphere. I mean, there was that Halo TV show as well, and that like
on Paramount
came and
Plus,
went.
Which is, it's available for free on YouTube now. The whole series.
Jesus Christ. Isn't that strange that, like, the Halo movie getting cancelled was, I reckon, for at least a week to a month, the biggest news in Hollywood? Like, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, it got us District 9 as
well. Yeah, exactly. Like, such a big deal to have the Halo movie get cancelled. And then, like, a decade and a bit later, it comes out with a whimper.
TV show no one gives a shit about, yeah.
No one gives a shit. Isn't that strange?
So I would like to see...
like it's a reverse Mandela effect situation.
Yeah.
Where it's like, this absolutely should have been the biggest deal in the world and no one watched it. I don't know a single person who watched it. I think I've seen 4 frames from the show.
Mm. I would like... I replayed this game recently, but I would like to see a good... it would have to be a very smart adaptation of Far Cry 3, which is like... that you have this game about like this privileged white kid frat boy whose friends get kidnapped, and then he essentially like becomes one with, or like culturally appropriates all of the island like warrior stuff and becomes like a proper warrior, or the Rakyat, I think they call them, and then ends up like saving his friends. But then like, yeah, just imagining this thing of like that by the time coming to his friends, and it's just like, who the fuck are you, dude? Like, what have you done? That, yeah, like it would need to have a lot more consequences in the show or movie than it does in the game. But it's also like, I think that Far Cry 3 is the only one with like a really interesting story that you could do something with. But it's also like, you would have to have native voices telling this story, and like it needs to be a story about, you realize, oh shit, we've been watching the villain origin story of the main character. It's not like, oh fuck you, yeah, cool, like take over the island.
Bliss also says, thoughts on the Munsters if you have any? Not really. I don't think I've ever seen it, to be honest, everyone. I don't think Richard or I ever really watched. Oh, you did, didn't you? I never really watched the Addams Family.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much I watched the Addams Family, but I definitely watched the Munsters and remember quite enjoying it. But I also, what I mean, it wasn't until you pointed out that like I realized the difference between the two, that it's like one are monsters and they act like a normal family, and the other one are normally, you know, ostensibly human but act like a creepy macabre family. There was another reverse Mandela effect, like, you know, thing I forgot existed, is the Rob Zombie's Munsters movie that came out earlier this year on Netflix. And like the production
budget
is like
$10.
It looks garbage. I haven't watched it, and by all accounts, it's horrific. And he, well, like Rob's, it's like a proper passion project. Like, you know,
On this, I did watch Brian Fuller's Munsters pilot from about 10 years ago because I was a big Brian Fuller fan. But yeah, I don't even. I remember Jerry O'Connell was in it.
Oh, yeah.
And that's all I remember.
Kangaroo Dan Jacks, from, Jerry O'Connell.
Dan from Hawaii has three haikus for us to read. Do you want to read any of these?
Says I only read one. And so okay, I'm going to say, Gomez is best simp, sub boy toy for Morticia. She deserves it all.
And that's the one with the most likes as well. So I think it's only fair.
Yeah.
That's the one we look at. All right, Richard. Well, we're going to move on now to some voice messages. This first one is titled Snap Snap from Vincent Lara, our patron here. So we're going to play this and respond to it in a timely fashion.
Hey, guys. Vinny here. Here to talk about a game called The New Addams Family, released on the Game Boy Color on November 19th, 2001. Developed by Seven Sense Studios, the story of the game is the Funny Day Company has bought the land from underneath the Addams Family house and is evicting the family in order to build an amusement park. Gomez yells at the man to say that his family has owned this land for generations, that they hold the deed to the land in perpetuity. The bank man says, well, cough up that document or else you are out. So the game is you playing as either Pugsley or Wednesday in search of that deed. The gameplay is that you walk around with the D-pad and hit A and B for confirm or back out. You walk around the mansion and solve various puzzles by means of looking for items. It's you explore the mansion and find something someone needs. So Wednesday needs something to lubricate her guillotine because the blade got stuck, or Gomez needs a new cigar. It's various means for you to walk around the mansion and interact with everyone that lives there or on the grounds. It's pretty big in scope. You walk around the mansion, you walk around the accompanying woods, and you walk around the family cemetery. It took me about an hour and a half to beat, with a guide, of course, because I'm not going to mess around with a licensed game from 2001. But I say it's a pretty okay game, especially for the Game Boy Color at the time. There is some really good writing at points where because you're dealing with Gomez needing a new cigar, and then he has like this existential crisis about letting his young child handle a cigar, and that he made him promise not to smoke it, and then Pugsley's like, oh no, I'm not gonna smoke it, I'm just gonna light the neighbor's house on fire, and Gomez is like, ah, attaboy. In terms of what happened to this Seventh Sense gaming studio, the only thing I could find after this was a Game Boy Color game about fishing and a 2010 PC game about cocktail mixing. And if you look up Seventh Sense Studio website, it now leads to an architecture studio of the same name. So did they deserve what they got? Yeah, probably.
Thank you once again. I have to say, unpaid intern Vinny.
Yeah, I love that homework. Vinny's basically like soft launching his own like YouTube series on our beating of, like, this would be a great YouTube channel, you know? Although I will say, I don't know if you had that as interesting of a time with this one, Vinny, as you have with some of the previous licensed games you've played.
Yeah,
Vincent.
Us.
This sounded very much like you were fulfilling an
going
obligation.
Going through the motions, yeah. Vincent did say he got through like a couple of minutes of Festa's Quest and gave up. But I think that was more due to like the emulator or something like that. But
right. Well, maybe that's where the content is, though, you know?
Yeah,
you've
maybe.
You've got to bleed for your content. We've got another message from Vinny that I'm quite scared to actually put on. He's called it The Ballad of Throats and Goats. Do we need to... Surely he's going to explain the needed context.
You'd hope so, yeah. All right, here we go.
All right.
Hey, guys, it's Vinny here doing his fucking job again. So a couple episodes ago, the challenge was thrown to me to reveal to Throat Goat that I refer to them as the Throat Goat. Well, I do not take challenges lightly, so I took a chance and seeing if someone still has the same phone number they've had for years, and I texted them. And luckily, it's the same person. And after chit-chatting for a little bit and catching up, I let them know how, you know, if they're ever in town around November 17th if they would want to see the Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes together, and they were very down for it, surprisingly. And I wish I could tell you the rest of the stories that we got together, we saw the movie, and history repeats itself. Unfortunately, a couple days before the 17th, I got a call from them. They were very apologetic, saying how they couldn't make it, how the plan was they were going to meet up with family that was still living in town, and then also then hang out with me to see the movie. Well, some family business this came up and they just didn't want to see their family, which I was very understandable. Then we just kind of kept talking on the phone and catching up about, you know, what we've been up to. They were very happy for me that I had a brief job playtesting video games, and they've been doing various art projects, and they moved up north, like a couple hours north. They confided in me that since knowing them, how they've come out as non-binary, and I got to know that person that was so freely, you know, unapologetically expressing themselves now, and just how the confidence in their voice was just so palpable. And it was very nice to have like a long conversation on the phone. You know, you don't really get those these days of just really connecting with someone on a phone call. And that lasts, geez, let me check. It was just over an hour of just getting to know this person who I knew back then, but was really truly themselves at this point. I'm very happy to know them now and all that. And I do truly hope that we get to meet up. So I haven't confided in them that they are the throat goat. I very much want to do that in person. So this will be an ongoing job of mine to try and connect and be there in person when I reveal to them the throat goatiness of their head. I did get to see the movie Bow to Songbirds and Snakes with one of my best friends, and it was pretty good, not gonna lie. Afterward wasn't as special, but meh, them's the breaks.
Staggeringly didn't explain the context, so for those who don't remember, on our Hunger Games Meeting of the Elders retrospective, Vinny revealed that he got the best blowjob of his life after watching, which one was it?
Mockingjay Part 2.
Look, I've got so many thoughts on this, and I can't believe I have to broadcast them live, essentially. I don't have time to think about this. One is like, this sounds, I'm sorry to embarrass you, Vinny, this sounds like the start of like a wonderful love story.
Yeah.
Like, the way you're describing this person makes it seem like there's maybe something could reignite there, but then at the same time, you haven't told them that they're on a, that you've talked about them on a podcast twice now, where you've referred to them as the throat goat, and this just goes out. People just listen to this, right? And you say you're going to tell them, but you don't know they're going to be okay with it. And even if though it's anonymous, what if this person does become special in your life again, Vinny? That means that if this love story comes to fruition, people are going to know. People are going to know that they're the throat goat that you talked about on the Cult Popture Meeting of the Elders Hunger Games retrospective. And I don't know how I feel about this. I think you should tell this person as soon as possible. I think you should tell them before you have sentimental hour-long phone calls with them, you know? Or that's when you tell them. This feels like Vinny's foil in his plan at the start of like how to lose a guy in 10 days kind of situation.
Falling in love wasn't part of the plan.
They are going to find out that the reason you got back in contact with them is because you told a blowjob story and we dared you to, and it's going to be a big argument, just like in the movies.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, Vinny.
I know you feel great right now, Vinny, but you are hurtling towards the end of Act 2 where they find out.
And a lot of times in real life, there is no Act 3, you know? I don't know, man. I'd say
keep
be careful. And if you'd like us to just remove the episode, maybe that's a conversation we can have. I want to have Throat Goat's explicit permission to leave these episodes.
I
want
to get them on the podcast.
God.
Get them on together. Let's next Elders, we'll get Vinny and this person on, and maybe Vinny, you can tell them live on the podcast. We'll facilitate that for you.
Wow, what a safe environment to be told that you have been the subject of a ongoing podcast storyline. We've got one more voice message here. This is from Dan from Hawaii. Let's
presumably
play it.
Less explicit. Let's check it out.
Well, we don't know.
Aloha also means hello. This is Dan from Hawaii calling in from Honolulu, here to share my thoughts as always. Happy to say that I really enjoyed the last two episodes. Adam's Family and Superhero Fatigue Quiz were fantastic. Keep up the great work. For Adam's Family, I posted my 3 haiku reviews of Adam's Family Values in the Discord chat, a Discord that everyone listening should join. feel free to read the one you like the most. Or, I don't know, roast me. Your show. Your rules. Moving on to superhero fatigue. I think the biggest contributing factor for MCU feeling, you know, just like, really? Is all the TV shows. I mean, Disney with both Star Wars and Marvel is pushing out all these TV shows that at this point, in order to feel caught up, it's so much more of an investment. And it's not exactly clear as much what you need to watch to catch up, right? Because in order to see the Marvels, you think, oh, just watch Captain Marvel, maybe Endgame. No, you got Miss Marvel. You got, I don't know, maybe Secret Invasion is important. You don't know. And it's just so much to catch up on. And the director said you didn't need to watch those things to feel caught up, but I went to see it without seeing Miss Marvel. And I was a little bit like, oh, wait, what a second. So I think that's the biggest constraining factor, but I want to push back on something. You said that Chadwick Boseman dying was a major part of the MCU. I think it really only affected Black Panther 2, right? And I personally don't mind it when an off-screen death happens, whether because the actor died or story choice. And I want to say I'm sorry to AJ because I'm an asshole about Mamiya too. But is there a time where you feel like off-screen deaths work? Like where you prefer it? Anyway, aloha. Doesn't mean sorry, but it does also mean goodbye.
Okay, it was retroactively changed, but we thought it was canon for a decade. Bo Peep's death in Toy Story 3, I thought that was great, right? Like, so you find out that some of the toys aren't with us anymore, including Bo Peep. We find out in Toy Story 4 that she is alive. But, you know, until then...
Did you always interpret that as she died?
Yeah, they're like, some people aren't with us anymore, like Wheezy or Bo Peep. And he's like, yeah, like Bo Peep.
I just assumed that it was like, oh, she got sold or something.
Well, and that is what happened. But so written out anyway, yeah, I think right. Is more the... And she was written out because the writers didn't think she would survive the furnace situation at the end, which is rather ghoulish to think about practically. Like, they all survive except for Bo Peep. Shatters from the pressure. So, like, I guess it's difficult because Dan is referring to a conversation we had on the Discord. And sort of a long, like this curse I have where one day I said I didn't like Mamma Mia 2, a movie I very rarely think about and other people think about a lot, so they always bring it up to me. And the fact that like Meryl Streep's character is dead in that movie, and it's not because Meryl Streep didn't want to return. She is in it for a brief scene at the end. It's because they thought that was the best decision. And I just think it's too fucking glum for Mamma Mia as a story. It's not this, just that the character died. It's that all her friends are still alive. The three potential fathers from the first film, they're all fine. Her mother, played by Cher, shows up. She's fine. And I just think it's real depressing to take a character who also, half of Mamma Mia 2 is about a younger version of her as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just kind of depressing to me.
I also think, and like, you and I spoke about
it. It's totally
this.
A taste thing as well. Yeah. I'm not, you know.
Well, and also the other big thing you say is that it's like, if Meryl Streep's willing to be in your movie, why don't you just have her be a main character?
Yeah. Yeah,
because there was Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, watching that it's like a character being killed at the end when it's like this, and there's a few movies like this, that's just the only example I can think of, where it's like, the stakes weren't life and death until someone just died.
But well, that's how I feel about Eight Simple Rules, a show, by the way, I didn't really watch anyway. But it was just like, to get an episode that's like a harrowing, like, examination of a family who have lost their father.
It's not like a Scrubs where they did.
No, in Scrubs you have room for that.
Yeah, because they deal with like a lot of heavier topics, and that's kind of one of the things that makes the show so great. But then it's like
the other one would be
a show that just never has any gravitas.
Yeah.
Having, you know, one of the saddest half hours of television I've ever seen.
Yeah. I mean, I think you could say, I didn't really watch the show, but like Corey Monteith dying and Glee just being like, I guess the character's dead now too. If I'm ever in charge of like a show or a movie and an actor dies, I reckon I would, depending on what the story is, I would be like much less inclined to make the death canonical and I'd probably look for other ways around it because ultimately,
like Paul Walker and Furious 7, Fate of the Furious.
Sure. Yeah. Because ultimately, like, I guess, and someone dying is always very sad. So if we can excuse that part for this,
well, I don't know
that
that's true.
That's true. Henry Kissinger. what I more mean is like when it comes down to like, okay, how do we deal with this real life person dying in this movie that doesn't matter to the grand scheme of life?
This person's, you know, life, like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I just think if you can kind of look at it, it's the same as any other problem. It's the same as a show getting cancelled before its like story was completed, I think. And I just think, like, I look at something like Glee, I look at something like Eight Simple Rules, and it's just like, this show was never meant to deal with something like this. It wasn't built to be able to have a mature conversation about this that fits within the bounds of its tone, I think. And despite Black Panther being like an action movie, I do kind of feel like if you didn't know he died, right, and you were just watching these movies, it's like, God, they made a massive deal out of him coming back in Endgame. Like, like there's so much of Black Panther 1 and Endgame are so like angled toward the future of T'Challa, I feel, that it's very clear that the character was not supposed to die. And all I'm saying is that it puts a blemish on the story, and it's a blemish that's unfortunately in cases where the actors died, it's unavoidable, and you do what you can. And so in terms of if I got given the keys and said you fix it, I don't know if I'd know what to do.
But also, like what Dan said about how, oh, it's only really affected Black Panther 2, I think that we've heard stories about, like, oh, you know, Black Panther was supposed to be the new Tony Stark, where it's like, for the Infinity Saga, that it's like he was kind of the overarching character, and even though he wasn't in every film, it's like his films were kind of the most important and all that stuff. But, like, you know, that's all rumors at this point. But I do think that having an Iron Man type character that's, you know, feels like the main character of the saga is being diluted a bit as well, because there is so much of the TV and stuff. But speaking of like real life tragedies and shit, there's one really I always think about that's really interesting. I think it was Married with Children, where Katie Sagal was pregnant in real life, and her character was pregnant alongside her, and then in real life she had a miscarriage, and so the writers made it so that whole season where she was pregnant was a dream. They wrote it off and just said, like, and because it's like, And it is like a really nice thing to do for the actress, because the alternatives were like, one, that, okay, well, you've had this real life miscarriage, now come into work and, you know, pretend to have a miscarriage, and we'll make this like really dark, like, plot point in
episode
this
episode of Reed's Notes, Married with Children.
Yeah. Or you force this actress who's just had a miscarriage to have to come into work every day and pretend to have a newborn child. And so, you know, even though it was all a dream, is like it's shorthand for a cop-out ending. It is like a pretty amazing, like, nice thing they did for the actress, but it's such a fascinating way of getting around that. And I mean, really, you know, like, it just as a favor to the actress, but yeah, it's interesting. Off-screen deaths. Yeah. I mean, I think off-screen deaths as a whole aren't necessarily bad, but there's just you Princess Leia dying and after Last Jedi was finished is like another classic example of where people are like, oh, she should have just died at the start of the film, when there's a bit where you think she's died, and it's like they didn't know the actress was going to die in a year. Like,
I also think it would make the story worse if Leia died then.
Yeah.
As well.
But then, yeah, anyway, it is weird that then she just, like, has a very unceremonious death in the next film.
See, that's the one that should have opened with her funeral.
Should have been off screen, yeah.
Should have been off screen. All right, everyone. That is Meeting of the Elders. Meeting adjourned for the month of November, start of December. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope you enjoyed us reading your thoughts. Stay tuned for the post-credit scene coming at you after this music ends. And if you liked this, please get on the Patreon, get on the Discord, get on Instagram, Twitter. We're all over the place. Come and support us. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next week. Welcome along to the post-credit scene. There's a segment at the end of each episode where if you donate $5 or more over at patreon.com/coldpopshire, you get to give us something to talk about in this, the post-credit scene. Richard, who's it from and what is it?
Michael Prefontaine asks, what amusement park do you wish existed? So is this like we have to take one from fiction and make it real, or can we just I really think we can just make up an amusement park.
Okay. A Bible themed amusement park. This is a Simpsons episode, but a Bible themed amusement parks where the rides aren't, they don't pussyfoot around. Like the rides are these harrowing representations of like the crate. Like you can get on Noah's Ark ride and they just flood the whole theme park.
Except for you and your partner.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like you, and you can go on like the single rider line and you just get paired with some random.
Or an actual lion's den that you have to pray to get out of, you know. What about you can go to Sodom and Gomorrah and just have your city be exploded.
Nice. I'm sure that's a great Bible reference.
Thank you.
You beat Goliath. And it's actually just a pub quiz. I mean,
a Cult Popshire theme park?
Oh, yeah. What would the rides be?
Die Alone, where you just...
Die Alone.
Experience something that's very awkward for everyone involved and live to deal with the consequences.
You get put in situations life. Where you're morally right, but still a bit of a dick. Yeah, I like it's interesting because the two like IPs that most suit a theme park being like would be Star Wars and Marvel, and you know they're both at Disneyland. And I think if you go to Disneyland or Disney World or whatever, that it's like the Marvel, if the at the California Adventure, it's like the Marvel stuff is so undercooked. Like there's this giant building that like feels like it should have something inside it, and there's just nothing yet. I don't know if they're building something or what's happening, but it's been open for like 3 or 4 years now, and you still can't go inside like the Avengers compound. And it's like, what are you hiding in there?
Still falling apart. Superhero fatigue.
Yeah,
what about exactly. A superhero fatigue ride? Where you just get lambasted with like...
No, it's like
every
a
every Marvel movie plays at once.
Yeah, it's like a roller coaster, but it's like an hour
it's
long.
It's too many. And and it's exhausting.
Yeah.
Like there are 100 loops.
Yeah. It's like the euthanasia coaster.
Yeah.
It's there, but it's Marvel themed. So yeah, is there any other IPs
of the time going over?
Yeah.
Do you just want to cut there? I'm worried about the time.
Yeah, okay, so.
Or do you... Sorry.
No, you're all good. I'll end on it's the euthanasia coaster, but it's Marvel themed.
Yeah, that's good.
Elders jizz. Rich. Bow, bow, ba down, ba down, bow, down, bow, ba down, ba down, bow, bow. Hello. Do you reckon you'd be able to record Akira tomorrow?
Record it tomorrow?
Yeah.
Potentially in like the evening, maybe?
Yeah, sweet.
All right, I have to go.
You have to go. Oh yeah, I'll